This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Welcome to the beach party. I hope you brought your sunblock, your towels, and your giant can of chili con carne, because it's time for Junk Food Cinema, and we're still in the throes of one junky summer. I am your host, Brian, and over there is Cargill.
Yeah.
Yes, that is correct. I am him.
I am Cargill, and this is our 101st episode.
Somehow I missed mentioning that last week was our 100th episode, although I've had a couple people tell me on Twitter that on iTunes we only have 99, which is crazy because that means there's an episode missing on iTunes.
Do you guys not have the Luft Balloons episode?
Yeah, the Luft Balloons episode was it was written actually as a protest episode. That's what a lot of people don't know about that podcast.
We did an episode on the German version of the Red Balloon.
Yeah. How do people not know this? Come on, guys. You call yourself junkies?
Now somebody's going to be trying to figure out which one's missing. It's going to be Santos. Santos is going to actually track down which episode is missing on iTunes.
Yes.
And how all of our iTunes listeners are being screwed out of glorious, glorious free content.
Yeah, we are sorry for that. But if you would like to call yourself a diehard junkie and visit our previous episodes, you can do so on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/Junk Food Cinema. And if you have no idea, if this is your first time listening to this, this is a weird place to jump in, but I will explain that this is a podcast where we talk about B-movies, we talk about cult movies, we talk about movies that haven't gotten their fair shake, according to us, and we talk about how, even though they may fall short academically of being classic films for one reason or another, we still love the experience of gorging ourselves on them, much like you would when you eat junk food, and that's why every episode ends with us comparing the movie to a snack food item. Now you got the gist. And now
we're a high concept podcast.
We are super high concept, or we're just super high. I'm not sure, but
we're
it
concept.
Is what we do.
Neither of us are high. We don't even have a good buzz on right
now. No, this is sad. This makes me very sad. But what doesn't make me sad is that we've reached the film this week that actually gave name to this entire series.
It is
series.
Our namesake.
It is. It is the reason for this entire series we've been doing for the last several months, One Junky Summer, which is celebrating the movies, the junkiest movies of 1986, and we have arrived at One Crazy Summer.
Ha! I'm Ed Stork, movie star, also known as Bobcat Goldthwait, and me and my friends John Cusack and Demi Moore.
I hate boats. I'm not getting on any boat.
I beg to differ.
Just had one crazy summer. Animals! Everyone loved us!
My car.
And we loved every minute. By the end of the summer, I felt I'd grown a lot personally. I felt a little bit better about who I was and where I was going.
When I first mentioned this to you, you were very much, and I was reading the list off of stuff that came out. You're like, we have to talk about One Crazy Summer.
We have to.
Yeah, we do. We both have a love for this movie.
And it's interesting. And one of the things I want to talk about as we talk about this movie is that I feel like it gets unfairly overshadowed by the other Savage Steve Holland directed John Cusack starring comedy of the 80s, which is, of course, Better Off Dead.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll put all my cards right here on the table. Which is hard to do because we're on the beach and there's sand everywhere and the table does not like to stay level. But I actually thought to myself, I don't need to revisit this. I remember this movie so well that I'll just be ready to talk about it. And I started thinking about all my favorite scenes, and a few seconds in I realized, nope, those are all scenes from Better Off Dead.
Yep.
Okay, obviously I do need to go back and revisit One Crazy Summer, which then made me realize, yeah, One Crazy Summer does get overshadowed by Better Off Dead quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it really does. And it's understandable because Better Off Dead has the better meme jokes, you know, the better cultural, the references that have become cultural references. And Better Off Dead is fucking great. But yeah, Better Off Dead and One Crazy Summer are why we have John Cusack. And why we have John Cusack as a romantic lead. Mm-hmm. Like, up until this point, you know, John Cusack was a guy for, you know, bit parts. Like, you see him in a couple bits in both him and his sister appear in John Hughes movies mm-hmm. in the early 80s. And here he is proving that he can be a romantic lead. And this, it's interesting because one of the things about the both of these films, and you can't really talk about one without the other, because you know, they're both directed by Savage Steve Holland, who would go on to be an incredibly prolific children's film director and children's television director, specifically working for Disney Channel and Nickelodeon, after having created so many pop and worked on so many popular kids programs. But these, when he was making teen-driven comedies in the early 80s, when he was super young, like in his mid-20s, he made these two absurdist comedies. And absurdist is the only way to describe them, because they don't actually exist in teen movie reality.
No, not at all.
They exist outside of it to the point of near fantasy. Like, he's playing around with Monty Python-esque absurdity mm-hmm. while making what are otherwise fill in the blank, color by paint by numbers teen films.
Yeah.
Like, they hit all of the beats, they play with all of the cliches, and then he likes ratcheting up the cliches to a level of absurdity. And just breaks all the rules of the universe you think you're living in. Like, a great example from Better Off Dead is when there's all of the paper boys, like, chasing him.
Like an army of them.
Yeah, an army of paper boys screaming $2.
I want my $2.
But here he goes even weirder and stranger. And in fact, the first 10 minutes of this movie are so absurd, setting up just so many strange, bizarre occurrences of silliness that you're just like, you can't take this movie seriously at all. You just know. And you know you're in for a comedy that is just there to provide jokes. Like, by the time somebody gets murdered at graduation by a flung graduation cap,
yeah,
and they just kind of set him down so they're not... So that they don't get blamed for it.
Yeah.
You realize exactly what kind of fucking movie you're in for.
It's a living cartoon. And I think that's kind of, bordered nicely and kind of underscored by the fact that you have a character played by Cusack who is an animator.
Yeah.
And is going to a design school in his final project, his application basically to this school of design is that he has to animate a love story. And John Cusack being the pinnacle of lovable losers. Like, this character is literally named Hoops and can't play basketball for shit.
He's named Hoops because his dad was a professional basketball player and he can't sink a basket.
Yeah. So, I mean, right from it's like Greek tragedy level. Like, right from the womb, this kid was cursed with this name that would set you up to think that later in life he'd be a successful athlete. And they have several points during the movie where his shooting ability isn't just bad, it is catastrophic. Like, he almost causes a riot on a ferry just by throwing part of a hot dog trying to get into a trash can. Like, it's just crazy. And John Cusack plays that part so well because he's a guy, especially in this era, that's very easy to root for, because on top of not being very good at basketball and having the name of Hoops, he also has never really been in love and has to get into his fallback plan for the future, you know, animate a story, a love story. So that's kind of where he sets off. He goes with his friend George to Nantucket. They're going to spend the summer out there because he knows that if he stays in his hometown, he's just going to get stuck in a rut. His parents literally give him a street sweeper as his first car. So he's like, no, I need to get out of here. And actually, I'm glad I revisited this post being a giant fan of Mad Men, because it never dawned on me that Freddie Rumsen from Mad Men is his friend George in this movie.
Yeah.
It was it was like, and he's playing a high schooler, which blew my mind because Freddie Rumsen is no spring chicken in Mad Men. And it's like, holy shit, that's funny. Well, Freddie Rumsen in high school.
Well, here's the thing about this movie. One of the key reasons to revisit this movie and why this movie works so well is the unbelievably great cast you have here. You know, so many people in this movie would go on to huge careers, you know, and it's so weird to think that here's this movie with this romantic comedy with these two relative unknowns in 1986, you know, Demi Moore just hit in 86.
Oh yeah. This young, nothing actress named Demi Moore.
Yeah. With John Cusack.
Yeah.
With comedy backup by Bobcat Goldthwait.
At his most Bobcat.
At his most Bobcat.
You could argue this is more Bobcat than Police Academy 2 Bobcat, which is a supremely high level of Bobcat. Like, yes. A dangerous level of Bobcat.
Yes.
The movie started! The movie's starting! Not really. I just want them to come running in from the lobby thinking that they missed something.
But at the same time, there's also lots of the type of comedy that Bobcat the director would go on and make, you know, like there's like this has a darkness to it and an absurdity that very much is like the Bobcat Goldthwait the director. So it's a very cool early role by him doing his 80s shtick.
Oh yeah.
Because
his face can't stay still.
Yes.
Kind of a thing. Yeah.
And
he's literally chewing scenery because the whole time his face is moving in a chewing motion, whether he's speaking or not.
Yeah, but on top of that, you have appearances by so many other great character actors.
Yeah.
Like you just mentioned Joel Murray,
yeah.
Who's in this. And of course, there's all sorts of like weird cameos by folks that include like a cameo by Rich Little.
Yep.
At the end, you've got Taylor Negrin shows up for a moment, making me happy, along with Rich Hall. It's like
Rich Little and Rich Hall in this movie.
Yes.
Come on, guys.
It's March of the 80s stand-up comics.
This movie is
this entire fucking movie.
Literally an embarrassment of riches. It has both Rich Hall and Rich Little, folks. Come on.
It's got, in my favorite, holy crap, is that really him? Of course, because this is a teen film, you've got the douchebag jock bully.
Oh my god!
And so you've
god.
Got the douchebag jock bully best friend.
Oh yes,
super douche
in his first
by
appearance.
Jeremy Piven
in his first on-screen appearance. Jeremy Piven.
And Jeremy Piven is so fucking detestable in this.
Yeah, for
it's
sure.
So great. You've got Joe Flattery.
Yep.
Showing up. Like this is right in the middle of SCTV. So what's funny is you've got someone from SCTV and someone from not necessarily the news,
yes.
Which were both rival comedy shows on different networks.
It's a movie that brings people together.
That's why the summer was so crazy, Cargill. It is one crazy summer. Like there's just so many. You've got William Hickey,
yes,
in this movie,
who has I think maybe three lines of dialogue total.
He just rolls by in a chair and grunts and plays part in, for my money, one of the greatest slapstick comedy scenes in a comedy ever. Like this has a scene so fucking funny it never fails to make me laugh.
I know exactly what you're talking
about. Oh yeah, no, we'll talk about it now. There is a brilliant moment in this, and this is the, like, if there was ever one moment to pull out of this as the classic comedy shtick, this is it. Bobcat Goldthwait has gotten himself stuck in a Godzilla costume.
Already hilarity just
already,
in that sentence.
He's in and he's spying on this party to make sure the douchebag jock doesn't leave because John Cusack is out with the douchebag jock's girlfriend. And of course the party happens to be for the announcement that they are building this large estate. They have a big model that is, you know, showing what this new development's going to look like with buildings, you know, small little buildings.
Yeah.
You probably, if you've not seen this movie, see where this is going. then old man Bumstead throws half a cigar out into the bushes, landing in Bobcat Goldthwait's mouth. The mouth starts filling up with smoke, which of course is filling up his face. He can't see. It's stinging his eyes. He starts screaming, running around. And and then in slow motion starts
trampling all over the mini village.
And it is, and the way it's done and the absurdity of the comedy and the way everybody starts screaming and running as if it's Godzilla is so fucking hilarious.
See, what's hilarious to me is we're sitting here recording this next to a giant Warhammer village that you've created, and I kind of want to see Bobcat Goldthwait coming in a Godzilla suit and just start freaking out.
And start crushing several $1,000 worth of miniatures.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want to see your money wasted, but the fact that this is set up as we're talking about this scene, I'm like, is he trying to recreate it? Is that what's happening right now? Because yeah, no, that would be kind of amazing.
We do kind of have a Warhammer set up for the moment.
It's like the fifth nerdiest thing in the room right now. I'm just going to point that out.
The fifth,
yeah. It's on the list. It's not on top of the list.
Yeah, so... Anyhow, but Godzilla. Back to Godzilla.
Oh my Godzilla.
Yeah, and so that scene is so unspeakably funny. It's just so good. But yeah, but this is this cast is just kind of unreal. Like you recognize everyone. Like yeah. Everyone who shows up in this
fucking
movie, you're like,
John Matuzak's in this.
Yes.
What? Why are all these things happening? Why are all these elements coming together? And then people you've seen in other Savage Steve Holland movies, a.k.a. the other Savage Steve Holland movie that we would talk about.
Actually, you say the other.
Yeah.
I kind of want to do an episode in the future, Take a Drink, Everybody, of his third and final feature film, How I Got Into College.
Oh, okay.
I have not seen it in quite some time, but I've seen it a couple of times, and I really enjoy that movie. I like all of Savage Steve Holland's movies and was kind of disappointed that he moved on to television, but he did give us Eek the Cat, and God bless Eek the Cat. So I don't know if you ever watched
Eek the Cat. I have no idea what Eek the Cat is.
Oh, it's a great Fox Saturday morning cartoon that was one of those cartoons it made in the 90s when they were going, hey, more adults watch cartoons these days than kids do, so let's make cartoons that adults like.
And so like in the Animaniacs Freakazoid type
that,
era?
Yeah, okay. this is that same era where Fox is like, hey, let's get more of these cartoons because they're working,
yeah.
And Savage Steve Holland created Eek the Cat. And so there's a bunch of people out there going, he made Eek the Cat? Yeah, he made Eek the fucking cat. moo-hoo-ha-ha. Yeah, there's like 12 people out there going, ah! But but you were saying.
But yeah, even people you've seen there are, you know, cast members that kind of that cross over in that way. Like Curtis Armstrong, obviously, is somebody that has a big part in Better Off Dead and is a completely different character in this movie than he's ever really played before, because he's this kind of good-hearted guy who wants to be a Marine. And the last person.
No, he doesn't want to be a Marine.
Well, he's about to be enlisted into the Marines because his dad runs the local Army-Navy shop and is a crazy military file. And actually, one of the jokes that always makes me laugh in this movie is when they're like, oh, Ack's out collecting shells on the beach. And like, well, that sounds normal. And then you cut to him basically at a firing range for, you know, giant
howitzers,
like collecting the discarded shells.
Your dad said you were collecting shells! Shells! 57 millimeter!
I don't know. I always kind of see Curtis Armstrong as just the annoying, gross friend. But this was a sweeter character than I think I've ever really seen.
Well, because you've always thought of him as Booger.
Yeah, no, that's true. But even in Better Off Dead, he's just kind of, you know, there's not a lot of heart to that character. But I don't know. There's just very different character than you're used to seeing from Curtis Armstrong.
If this film has one glaring flaw, it's that the film actually forgets about Curtis Armstrong for periods of time where they even forget he's in scenes, and then all of a sudden it'll cut to him and you'll be like, oh shit. Yeah, I guess he's here too.
Motherfuckers act like they forgot about Booger. How are you going to do that? You can't forget about Booger. And the thing I really do like about One Crazy Summer is that it kind of what you were saying before, it takes all of the things that are great about 80s comedies and pushes them to 11 in a way that almost seems like we've talked about this with movies before that are self-aware to the point of almost being prescient. Like they already have an understanding of what 80s comedies are and are kind of poking fun at it by cranking up these absurdities. Like we mentioned, the 80s douchebag character. This guy is cranked up higher than Billy Zabka's collar. Like, that's how much of a douchebag he is. Like, he is the Aryan blonde, don't touch my car, super hot girlfriend, even though he's a complete dick, rich dad. Like, he's a joke.
I'm doing my laps.
Yes, he's a caricature of, like, the Billy Zabka type bully.
Yeah.
His dad is a crazy, wacky, like, likes to listen to lobsters get boiled and...
Well, not only that, he's got an obsession with murdering lobsters.
Yes,
like,
yes.
He actually has a moment where he's testing his crossbow on lobsters. Like,
yeah.
He's a guy opening a lobster restaurant who clearly hates lobsters.
And they never explain why.
Oh, they don't explain anything. No. That's the beauty of this comedy. Like, this is how absurd it is. It is, and in true Brian Salisbury fashion, it has Brian Salisbury's favorite plot of all time.
Save the rec center.
Save the rec center.
Yep.
So we've got to save... The third act of this movie is about saving a rec center that we never see.
Yeah, we don't know.
We keep hearing about all of these people who live in this house.
Yeah.
What about these people? What people?
What? Who are these people that are living in this house? It's her house. It's her grandfather's house. Demi Moore's grandfather's house, who has just passed away. But there are other people who depend on it as housing, and yet the one scene where we actually see the house where the bulldozers are there because it looks like the bullies are going to win and tear it down, she's the only one leaving. She's the only one leaving the house. So who the fuck are these other people staying there, and where are they?
They keep referring to, because that's the thing, is that we're not saving this house that this girl inherited. We're saving a house where people live. We're saving the rec center.
Yeah, it's totally a rec center.
We have to save the rec center.
Yeah.
And but we see the porch of the rec center at some point, and we don't actually see anybody who lives there.
No. And then they push their bad guy even further by, like, their bad guy kicks a dog. Like,
dog from Mars.
Like, it kicks this poor dog, and it's like, oh, we already didn't like you, but I guess this movie really is just going, you know, to extremes. And one of the things I love is that in the background of this whole movie on Nantucket, because we got to make fun of Jaws, because they're in Nantucket.
Well, they're in Nantucket, and they're in Nantucket, you know, less than a decade or about a decade after Jaws came out. So.
Yeah. So we have to be shooting a movie in Nantucket about an angry dolphin with rabies. So it's pretty much Jaws, except it's a dolphin with rabies.
It's foam, too.
Yeah. And so that's kind of a running thing throughout the whole movie. Like, Bobcat Goldthwait and Tom Villard's characters are kind of running security-ish on this movie.
Part-time.
Doing a terrible job at it,
because
obviously.
You have to apparently protect the Godzilla suit that you needed for Foam 2.
Yeah, again, not explained.
No.
No reason.
This movie exists to be absurd. And that's what... This is what I really love about Savage Steve Holland's films. All three of his films are almost satires on the teen film genre, as opposed to actually existing in the teen film genre.
Right.
Like, here he's making fun of these high school and college movies by we find out that our characters are graduating from generic high school.
Yeah, literally generic. It's called generic high school.
It's not only called generic high school, but they give it a lowercase g.
Yes.
Like, I mean, it's that generic.
Ever since it was a lowercase g, it has always been generic.
Little g.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when we watched Return of the Killer Tomatoes. Like, it's like satire on that level, where it gets silly and absurd and actually kind of self-aware of the genre that it's making fun of, and it just kind of feels like a living cartoon.
Yeah.
And that's
what makes these infinitely rewatchable, because they don't take themselves seriously, but they have... The thing is that Savage Steve Holland knows how to get the heart out of it.
Yes.
Like, care about these characters so that when they get their truly absurd fucking ending, you are invested, you're in it. When they're in the regatta race and they blow off the back of their boat and you see the douchebag's Ferrari in there, you are just, you're like, yeah, it's one of those. You are invested in what is a stupid fucking plot.
Yes.
A bunch of people who don't boat need to build a boat.
Yes.
And win a regatta race in less than a week to save the rec center. Like, it's such a stupid fucking plot. and and it knows it's a stupid fucking plot, but it just fucking goes for it and gives you a montage.
You need a montage.
Because what you need is a montage, and then spends the rest of the time making you give a shit about the characters so that you cared that they win the race in this stupid fucking plot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. There's a lot that falls into place very quickly for this to become a story. There's just a lot of things. It's like you arrive there. Demi Moore and John Cusack meet when she's running from the weirdest biker gang I have ever seen in my entire life. Like, there's guys in sweater vests, and then there's this easily 55-year-old man with pink spiky hair.
Do you not know that Sloth?
No, I know. It's John Matuszak. No, I get it. But the pink hair?
Oh, yeah. It's Sloth and pink hair.
But why? Like, he looks like a Cyndi Lauper groupie.
Yeah, this is the mid-80s. Savage Steve Holland is giving us the most ridiculous punks you've ever seen. Because the beauty is he's got this long pink hair that's clearly a wig with his brown beard.
Yes.
With that just totally clashes in a way that's like, this is ridiculous. and they all look ridiculous so that we can get this chase scene that ends with us jumping a car impossibly onto a ferry.
Yeah.
So that we can watch punks ride their motorcycles off in slow motion into the water, because this movie loves its bullies.
You know, it's funny. There's a lot of actually decently impressive stunt work in this. Like, there's the scene where Joel Murray's crazy uncle is trying to, throughout the movie, is trying to win this $1 million radio contest, and at one point trips and falls into the bathtub carrying the radio and the phone. And the resulting electric shock blasts him out of a second-story window and into the water, which is pretty impressive. The ending of the movie is firing a rocket at a radio station, and the scene that Cargill just mentioned with the car jumping onto the ferry. Like, there's actually a decent amount of stunt work in this movie.
Yeah. I'm not going to say it's Maniac Cop level stunt work.
No, well, come on.
There's definitely some fun stunts in it. God, the stunts are all stupid and absurd.
Oh, of course.
Like, I mean, again, this is not a movie you watch for reality.
The thing is,
that's what's so weird is the Savage Steve Holland films exist in this weird middle ground between John Hughes movies and Not Another Teen Movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's not so absurd as Not Another Teen Movie, where it just exists in a nonsensical, satirical post Abramoff,
post Red Scorpion. What's going on here?
Yeah, this is a post Red Scorpion Rambo 3 movie.
Those Ruskies.
See, the beauty is you caught that deep cut too, because I was just like, I was like, no, he's not going to get the Reds. Yay, he pulled out the Red Scorpion reference. Abramoff. Excellent. It's not a Zucker Abrams level of zaniness. It's this weird middle ground, which is what I think makes his film so distinct, because you don't find a lot of films that exist in this kind of an absurd universe that you're still, because that's the thing about Not Another Teen Movie and movies of its ilk. You're not invested in the ending. Like, you don't watch Airplane because you're really invested in the relationship between these two characters and you want to see them land the plane.
Well, yeah, you don't watch Airplane because you're like, oh, I really like tense movies that keep me on the edge of my seat.
Yeah, no. You watch it because you want to laugh at the zaniness.
Yeah.
But here, you both enjoy the zaniness and you're invested in the story and invested in the characters in the same way that you would be in any other, you know, 80s teen movie.
Yeah. And they do a great job of walking that line. I've always felt like the best satire, the best parody movies are the ones that can make fun of their own genre, but still be a formidable entry into that genre. And I think that's exactly what One Crazy Summer does. It's like, yes, to a certain degree, it is sending up 80s teen films, but that does not mean it shortcuts or skirts around the obligation to be a great 80s teen comedy. Like, that's exactly, they do both. And I feel like that's what you have to do to have a successful parody satire type film, is yeah, that's great that you are aware of the genre, but like, take that awareness and use it to be your own, you know, to be your own stellar entry into that genre. And that's what I love about One Crazy Summer. I also love just all of the little weird things that are just going on around everyone. Like there's a joke at one point where they take the dog to the animal hospital and they sit that sign. They sit on that sign for a little bit longer than you would think. They're like, what are we trying to get out of this? And then immediately cut to a dog pushing a cat in a wheelchair because the joke is animal hospital, hospital run by animals. And it's like, that is such a bizarre little joke.
Yeah.
That's a visual gag that no one notices in this movie. Like none of the people sitting in that waiting room are like, huh, that dog is pushing a cat in a wheelchair. No, in this world, that's just a thing that happens, I guess.
It's a thing that happens. They're at the animal hospital with Bosco, who Bosco referred to as a male dog several times.
Somehow.
Shows up with puppies.
Puppies.
At the end. But absurdly, puppies with cones around their head.
They also have
Bosco's,
cones. Yeah.
Puppies.
Which part of that is harder to explain? The fact that a male dog gave birth or that all the puppies were born with plastic cones. It's hard to say. It's a coin flip, I feel. Yeah. Which of that is more absurd?
But that is the kind of absurdist comedy that this movie's just rife with. But the thing is it's consistently funny.
Yeah.
Like the jokes, even now, so many of them still land, even though, you know, comedy sensibilities have changed. There's one running gag that I'm not a fan of in this movie. And it's the one where Murray keeps getting caught underneath a chair with a very large man who apparently has gas.
And that gas is lethal, evidently, because both the times he ends up in the hospital. I'm with you on that. I could see the problem with that. But one of the things that's weird to me, and I kind of wanted to ask you about this, because maybe I'm too young to remember why, but it seemed like there were a lot of movies in this era that featured either animated opening title sequences or animation throughout the movie. Like Savage Steve, like Better Off Dead having it makes sense because, you know, they're both Savage Steve Holland movies, but like Weekend at Bernie's has that animated opening. Mannequin has an animated opening, and it's in a very similar style of animation. And I don't know, like, why was that so popular for that brief window of time for all of these comedies to have like these either diversions that were animated or their opening titles were animated. Like it seems like a really bizarre trend to me.
I have no idea. I can't honestly tell you this. It's one of those, it's just something that was there. Like comedies had animated stuff sometimes.
Yeah. I can't place it either. It's just something that I've noticed watching a lot of 80s comedies recently is that, yeah, they love to. And in fact, Savage Steve Holland uses it in this movie to fuck with Siskel and Ebert because they didn't like Better Off Dead. So two of the crazy bunnies that get blown up at the end of this movie actually do resemble Siskel and Ebert.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, like,
first of all, how did Siskel and Ebert not like Better Off Dead?
I don't know.
That's a perfectly good waste of a white boy.
Go that way really fast. If something gets in your way, turn. Words that
I
live
by. You know what the street value of all this snow is? Like, Better Off Dead is so fucking funny. Like, I get people not liking One Crazy Summer. It's a bit over the fucking top.
Oh, absolutely.
It's more over the top than Better Off Dead, because Better Off Dead breaks the rules of its own universe several times for humorous effect. But it is, and is slightly more grounded in reality, but it's still fucking absurd, you know? This guy has to win a ski race in order to win the love of, you know, of the girl.
Well, is it any more absurd than having to win a regatta in order to keep a house that apparently
No. Better Off Dead is not nearly as absurd as this, because the regatta race one, just like that's just all over the, like, I love the fact that he's, you know, one of the other stupid things about this movie that's just gloriously stupid is he hates boats.
Yeah.
He fucking hates boats, and then he has to win a regatta race. So how does he get comfortable with boats? He's told by Demi Moore, maybe you just haven't had the right experiences on a boat, and she plucks his V card on a boat, apparently.
Yeah.
And that's and now he can race boats and win. So yeah.
Whereas they had to tell Brody it's only an island if you look at it from the water, Demi Moore takes the tact of, let's just fuck on a boat, and then you won't be afraid of boats anymore, which I feel like is probably, I mean, I never finished.
It's like mixing two of your favorite Lonely Island songs together in one.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And as much as I only have a bachelor's in psychology, I think that's a really helpful way to cure hydrophobia. So Demi Moore, if you're listening, I think you should set up a practice where you cure people of hydrophobia by having sex with them in a boat. I think that's a winning, that needs to go into the DSM-4 as the go-to treatment for hydrophobia.
There we go.
I mean, that's what I would do.
Old boy finally caught a break. This love story lasted all summer long.
Yeah. One of the other weird things this movie does, like a weird 1986 connection, is this movie, the last thing you see on screen at the end of this movie is a little message to the audience saying, the movie's over, you can go home now. Which, you know, considering, you know, this movie came out
the same year,
within weeks, like, this is not a reference of any kind. It's not borrowing, like, for some reason, two teen films, one established Steve Holland film making fun of this kind of movie, and one of this actual movie, they both end with, you can go home. Now, of course, you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is so much better and more classic.
Yeah, sure.
But they do both end with telling the audience to go home.
Was there an epidemic? Was there a problem in this country in 1986 that people literally didn't know when to go home after the movie was over? Were people just pitching tins? Is that how that house... Cargill, wait a minute. I think we may have solved it. Was the house that Demi Moore's grandfather left her just a movie theater? And because there weren't enough movies in which people at the end of the film said go home, they just stayed there? And that's how all these people end up living in that house? Are they trying to save not just a rec center, but a community movie theater? Because I am even more on board for that mission. We have to stop the lobster murdering family of rich douchebag bullies from shutting down our movie theater.
Speaking of which...
Speaking of any of that nonsense.
Yeah, no. I actually have a perfect segue from there. And now you're dismantling my perfect segue.
That's what I do.
This movie has two fake movies within a movie.
Oh, yes.
That are both actually fun parodies. They have Chainsaw Date, because, of course, this is 1986. So we are right in the height. As we just talked about last week, up until this point, our monsters in the movie theater were mostly dudes with weapons.
Yes.
And guys with chainsaws was a thing. Not as big a thing as movies would have us believe, but essentially everybody was kind of making fun of Texas Chainsaw Massacre and all the stuff that came after Texas Chainsaw Massacre and those type of splatter movies. So they have this thing called Chainsaw Date, which is amusing. And then the double feature of Chainsaw Date is a movie we see later when they go back to the drive-in, called Hemorrhoids from Hell. And there's just this, we only see one moment of the movie, but it's such a great satire of that kind of bizarre movie in which the doctor just is talking to his nurse and he's like, we have to stop these hemorrhoids from hell. I'm going in. No, doctor, you'll be killed. And then he just goes down. So you assume the doctor is going in to actually do battle with a demonic fucking hemorrhoid on someone's ass. And it's a really great, clever, fun joke that almost reminds me of Rubber.
Oh, yeah.
About the killer tire. For those of you that have never seen Rubber, Rubber is actually, it's not just a movie about a killer tire. It's a meta movie about people not wanting to be in a movie about a killer tire. And this very much kind of felt like that. And I really like those moments.
It's true that the whole meta thing is also noticeable in Savage Steve Holland movies by the number of times that John Cusack will break the fourth wall. And in Better Off Dead, he did it very directly. He looked right at the camera and started talking very, you know, Ferris Bueller, which again, same.
Pre-Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was a year before Ferris Bueller was Better Off Dead.
Oh, Better Off Dead was. Yeah, you're right. But in this movie, he does it as well, but he does it through his artwork. Like
his cute and fuzzy bunnies.
The cute and fuzzy bunnies. And anytime he is the breakaway moments, the little vignettes where he's just animating what's going on in Hoop's life is kind of a similar tact. It's very it is very much that whole breaking the fourth wall thing, and just kind of supports the idea that Steve Holland was very aware of what these movies were and what the tropes were and what the rules were, and was kind of playing along with them the way you go along with a joke. And I feel like that's kind of why One Crazy Summer is, as over the top as it is, still really funny. It's a very different flavor of film, I think, than Better Off Dead, or maybe it's the same flavor, just turned way the hell up. But I think it works pretty damn well.
Also, we don't often talk about this, but One Crazy Summer has such a great fucking poster.
Yeah.
And like such a great poster. Like it's almost a poster that makes you feel like the film should be a lot better. Like it's one of those. Like, don't get me wrong, we both love this movie. This movie's a lot of fun. This is not a movie you need to apologize for in any way, shape, or form. But it's just such a good poster that it's like it's a far better poster than Better Off Dead's poster. Like it is, it's just, there's something classic about the One Crazy Summer and the badass son behind
wearing Geordi LaForge glasses. Son.
Yeah. And that were very popular for like 5 minutes in the '80s.
Yeah.
With your standard classic drawn, you know, summer characters that you'd find on almost any poster.
Was this a Drew Struzan? It's kind of got that like Drew Struzan feel to it, the way the characters are drawn on this.
I don't know who did it. I would not be surprised.
Yeah, no, it is a beautiful poster. I kind of want to have this one. It's up in my office because yeah, it's damn pretty. And you're right, for the type of movie this is, it does kind of set you in the right mindset though, because if you were to look at this poster, the number one most prominent character on this poster is the fucking sun.
Yeah. Like it was a 1986 movie. They're like, we don't have any names to sell this with. Like all of the comedians that are there, that show up in this movie, none of them were big names at the time. You know, they were they were stand-up comedians and people on, you know, cable comedy shows. Like these were not big name comedians. This was not a big name cast, despite the fact that now in retrospect, it's like, holy shit, it's a John Cusack, Demi Moore romantic comedy from the 80s. But in at the time, no, you don't have it. So what you sell is you sell teens at the beach in the summer. And it's a movie we're releasing in the summer. So, of course, you want to watch a summer fun film during the summer. Come on, kids. It definitely screams fun, zany comedy, which is what this fucking is.
Absolutely.
It really was one crazy summer.
And that brings us to the junk food pairing, which I'm going to borrow from one of our least favorite running gags in this movie, if I may, for just a second. I want you to go and get a picnic basket, and I want you to put inside that picnic basket a giant bag of chips, an entire rotisserie chicken, a massive can of chili con carne, and the tiniest bottle of champagne you can possibly find, and take those things, none of which really belong at the beach, and take them all to the fucking beach, because that is what this movie is. It's a bunch of crazy things crammed into a beach movie that some of them, yeah, absolutely, that feels like a beach movie, and other things, what the hell is Godzilla doing here? It doesn't matter, because it's a Savage Steve Holland movie and we're going to make it work.
You know what I love that that this tiny champagne bottle that they have, it's actually Jose Cuervo.
It is Cuervo. Thank you. I was like, they keep calling it champagne. Cuervo. I'm pretty sure that's tequila, guys.
They're christening their boat with a tiny bottle of a hotel bottle of tequila.
Yes. I also love that they called their boat the boat. Like that's what's painted across the side.
Because that's the absurdity of this fucking movie. It's like, it doesn't matter what it's fucking called.
Yeah.
It's the boat. And they're taking the boat to win the regatta race so that they can trade the trophy for the house. Because the crazy rich grandfather will throw out the dad and his son and disinherit them if they doesn't win the regatta race.
I would love to be the lawyer that has to figure out that case. I'm sorry, the legality of trading the deed to a house for a trophy that you didn't win but is being given to you so you can pretend you won? Yeah, that would be fun to litigate. So good luck, whoever that lawyer is, and good luck to all of you I don't know. That was a terrible segue. But you should. What you should do with all this newfound luck is you should go to iTunes and Stitcher and win yourself a jackpot full of our previous episodes that are available there.
Everyone's a winner.
Everyone's a winner. You could also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like the show, you can kick in a few shekels to our Patreon account, which is just patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. Thank you guys so much to everyone who's already pledged to that. We are actually doing our very first Junk Food a la Mode this week, which was a show that we promised to do if we would hit our $200 goal, which we did. So thank you very much. Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me at on Twitter at Massaworm, MassaWyrm, and on Facebook, facebook.com/Massaworm.
Awesome. You can find me online on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury, or my Facebook page is facebook.com/BryanSalisburyCritic. And we will be back next week with another fun film of 1986, another junky movie from that glorious era. But I have to say, so far, it has been... No, I'm not going to say. It's too easy.